secret time, sometimes when I get out of the shower, I dry my asshole on the bed. Like, that was, and that's so true. Like, I dry out and sit on the bed and dry my asshole on the bed. Leanne caught me one time. It was like, secret time, sometimes when I wipe my ass, I spit on the toilet paper. It's called a Mississippi wet wipe.
Are we in?
Those are fresh, huh?
Are we in?
Yeah, I just got them done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bert Kreischer's here with some of the best toenails I've ever seen in my entire life. They match the rug really, really well.
I will say they match our feel of our podcast really well.
Really?
Nice blue. Yeah, look at this. We got a nice, it's a blue.
Blue. This is our first day with a new set. We just got a new set. What do you think?
Are you serious?
This is literally, you were literally the first person to do
okay.
it.
Okay.
What, like, what are your notes?
You know what?
Uh-oh.
You should, no, I love it a lot. It's, I love
it
a lot.
We can change it.
Well, hold on.
It.
So I was the first generation of guys who did a TV show where they created it to make it feel like a man cave.
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
So in 2000,
all right.
I was on a show called The X Show, and they made it so you felt like you were in your mom's basement.
Sick.
Right? Mm. And so I remember going like, oh, this is cool. But then I started watching lots of those shows. I was like, huh. Then we got into podcasting.
Okay.
And we all started doing the same thing. We started doing stuff like this, and I like it. Here's the thing. How do you make it yours? How do you, like, right now, this is your first attempt at your thumbprint. I think you need your guests to bring you a present.
Ooh, I like
that. Oh, and then we can do the wall.
And,
a good jumping off point.
I like that a lot. Yeah, well, this is brand new. It doesn't have, it's funny because it looks like it should smell like stale cigarettes, but it just smells like nothing.
Yeah.
Smell like brand new.
Is there any choice on the records?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I was not here when this was built.
Yeah, we both were literally on the road.
FaceTiming
the designer.
Designer
was really? FaceTiming us, being like, you like it? And we're like, I have no frame of reference.
It's the little things sometimes add. So like when we do Something's Burning, we just did it regular and it kind of looked stale. And then we had a lighting guy come in and he put lights on the outsides of the window shooting into the house.
Yes,
and all of a sudden, you're like, this looks beautiful.
That's what we were thinking. We were like, what can we put behind these windows? We were thinking like something like scenery or see grass blowing in the wind would be awesome.
It was like...
But then you might get like sidetracked.
No, because it's ultimately, you know, Tom Green, when he started it, he had the landscape of Los Angeles behind him.
Sick. Oh.
The way that they do it in the Tonight Show, they have a screen that is.
Yep.
Tim has that. Tim has like 19 podcast sets.
Yeah, he's, well, you know, Tim and Theo, the childless group of men that I'm friends with,
uh-huh.
They can just travel anywhere and do a podcast out of anywhere.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's, you know, it kind of breathes life into your podcast a little bit.
Absolutely.
When you do it in a different set.
Yeah.
Different producers, different cities, because you're jumping in. I remember even when Schultz and Flagrant went down to Miami and they had the podcast there.
It's my most jealous I've ever been of that man in my life.
But you could. I feel like you would have multiple sets.
I had kids. During that time, it was the pandemic, and him and his boys rolled down to a fucking mansion in Miami and lived on boats and like
they did it right.
Yeah. I was so. I've never wanted to kill my entire family in a bathtub more. I mean, there's times you don't understand this as a like because I've been married so long.
One time already gone every day of the year, but you're like, when I come back, you guys are done.
Look, there's that. There was one time I had to stay sober to luau, and I was like, I'd murder them
Holy
in a bathtub.
Shit.
Yeah, but then
Was this sober October type thing? Why do you have to say sober?
No.
Did you get cut off?
No.
And you called that being sober?
No.
Put X on your hands?
No. We got on the plane and I said to Leanne very casually, I said, I don't think I'm gonna drink. So, vacations get away from me. And like vacations, I have no work, so I drink quicker. Like if I have work, I don't drink all day long.
Maybe
I'll drink at the end of the night. But if I worked hard, I will just go to bed.
Right.
And so I noticed that like when I go on vacation, I start drinking earlier, and then I drink longer, and then the next day I'm hungover, and it's like all of a sudden the vacation's just miserable. And I casually sat on the plane. I said, you know, the girls were, it was like they were still young. I said, you know, maybe I'm not going to drink on this trip to Hawaii. And she like lit up. She's like, don't. I said, what? She goes, be present.
It's going to be so much cheaper, Bert.
And you have no idea.
Yeah, we like to save $27,000, Burr, please.
Dude, the big story, right? I went to sushi with Ralphie one time in Atlantis, and we went to sushi, and he'd been paying the whole week. And it was me and Leanne, him and Lana, their nanny, and August was a baby. No, not August, the other one. No, it was August. He was a baby. And he had been paying for every meal. And the last meal, Leanne's like, hey, we got to pick up one bill. And I was like, okay. So I went over. I'd never done this before. I went up to the lady and I was like, hey, the big guy doesn't pay. And I gave her my credit card. She's like, awesome.
She's like the big guy is paying.
Yeah. Wait, not compared to him.
Oh, right.
Must be nice going out to you with him. Everyone's looking at him. Yeah, this fat fuck.
How much bigger do they get? Wait, how big is this guy gonna be?
This whole table's Russian dolls.
The big guy doesn't pay. He's like, the big guy just gave me his card. So she comes over with the bill, and it's been a while, but I get the bill, and it's like $2,500 for one meal, and it's sushi. No. And I'm like, I look at it, and Leanne goes, how much is it? And I just said, shut the fuck up. And Ralphie goes, playa, let me pick up some of that bill. And I was like, no, I got it. Yeah. I hadn't planned on tipping as much as the bill. Like, the tip was I didn't plan on the bill being $500.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. Leanne and I got into the biggest fight I've ever been on. Ralphie convinced me real quick, take out $1,000 out of your bank account and put it on black. I lost that also.
Fuck.
It was the biggest fight. But then one night,
Did you feel putting that $1,000? I got dinner and some right now.
Boom, hit on red so quick. It's almost like the ball stopped and jumped and went. You ever seen a ball stop so quick on it? You're like, hold on.
Yeah.
It didn't get like the full spin.
Let's do it again.
So Ralphie, like maybe 7 years later, he goes, hey, player, the story's funny, but you drank a lot of that fucking bill too. He's like, I ate $1,000. You drank $1,700. I did a podcast. You know, like sometimes I wish I could go through. And I wish I could stop doing Burtcast and go through all the ones I've done and make them better. Like, just go through all of them from the first one and almost comment on them, pull out all the bullshit and go, here's what you need to know about this episode. Because there was an episode I did with Ralphie and Joey Diaz where they took too many edibles and they would fall asleep at different points in the podcast.
I just think I've seen clips of that.
And Ralphie, we wake him up at the end. And he gets scared, and he jumps up, and he lands on my daughter's dollhouse, and he crushes it. And Joey Diaz and I laugh for fucking 7 minutes. And Ralphie trying to figure out where he is. Like, player, come on. Everyone's on this under me.
I got a chimney in my ass.
And he had no recollection. And like a month later, he goes, did I crush a baby girl's dollhouse? And I was like, yeah, you did. And he was like, shit, I owe that baby girl a dollhouse. And I was like, Ralphie, it's fine. They don't play with dolls.
You were like, it was $2,500. That dollhouse was $2,500.
He's been dead now for a while.
Been a minute.
It's kind of crazy that you die and people forget about you.
It is, but I think you can. But hold on. You can look at it like a negative. You also look at it as a positive, because when you're freaking out about shit, you can be like, "Cool, man, no one's gonna care about me in 9 years. Stop freaking out about TikTok views."
But you're alive now, so people care about you now.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's the hard part. But it is a comforting. It's like the whole thing. It's like the Earth is so. When you, all these fucking, NASA
dust
people,
in the wind.
The NASA people look at it, they're like, oh, we don't. It doesn't matter because we're so tiny. And who cares? It is a nice thought to be like, dude, I got into a car accident. Who gives a fuck? I'm gonna be when I'm dead. No one's gonna
There's
care.
There's no
about
algorithm
me.
In heaven.
Yeah, it's nice. Comforting.
It's more comfort. All right. Sidebar. And this isn't gonna sound like great, but it's. It's almost better when someone you know dies and then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm still alive. But why do we worry so much? As opposed to, I'm going to be dead. I like when my friends die and I get to go, isn't that crazy? We haven't thought about Ralphie in a while. Life's meaningless. Anyway, I'm alive. I'm here. I got a pool.
You're saying their death makes you almost more alive.
It's like, what was the closest you've ever come to death?
I smacked a foam pole doing about.
Thought you were going to say a black woman. I smacked a black woman. I was like, that's a story I want to hear.
He said foam pole and you got black woman?
Well, because I was like close to death. I smacked a black woman.
Yeah, I mean, even if you touch a black woman's hair, you would be dead.
I wasn't thinking, when you said smack, I thought like this.
So
my head's like, what's the most dangerous thing to smack?
Yeah.
Not a phone pole.
It goes black woman, then tiger.
And then a phone pole.
Then a phone pole, yeah.
I would actually probably slap a tiger before a black woman.
Honestly, you might have a point.
I'm being dead serious.
You might have a point.
I've worked with tigers and lions.
And black women.
He doesn't work with black people.
No, Miss Pat. What would you rather do? Slap Miss Pat in public. In public. On camera.
Okay.
Slap a death black right woman there. Or slap a tiger? I'll take a tiger in public on camera.
Tiger in public all day.
And on camera all day long. Did you see that motherfucker slap a tiger? Did you see that motherfucker slap a tiger? He is fucking fearless. Did you see that motherfucker slap Angel Reese?
You have a good point though, because once you give an example of the person we're talking, yeah, you're right. I'd rather there's no way I'd smack Miss Pat in any context. I'm going Bengal tiger in the Bronx Zoo, square off, just smack it. Goddamn.
Las Vegas, this Friday, 10 p.m. First time ever I'm performing at the Venetian in the Palazzo Theater. Let's freaking sell this thing out. Few more tickets left. Super excited. This Friday, 10 p.m. Pull up. Few more tickets left. TrevorWallace.com. And then we're flying into the dates. If you hear your city, go to my website, TrevorWallace.com, for tickets. Going to read through them real quickly. Charleston, South Carolina, Atlanta, Jacksonville, Tampa, Tallahassee, Sarasota, Fort Myers, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, New York City at the Beacon, one of the most beautiful theaters of my entire career, Salt Lake City, Utah, Boise, we just added a late show because the first show sold out December 7th. We added a late show at 9 p.m. Boise, these tickets will be on sale today. Boise, Dayton, Ohio, I had to reschedule the dates to now, December 12th through December 14th. So if you had tickets before, the exact same date and time is now eligible for those tickets. Or if you need a refund, just respond to the email. You get a full refund. But those are now moved to December 12th through the 14th. I'm so sorry. I will see you then. Then we're moving on to Nashville, Tennessee, Louisville, Cleveland, Los Angeles, my hometown, Ventura County, San Luis Obispo, Bakersfield, California, Fresno, Oakland, Sacramento, Reno, Austin, Grand Prairie, aka Dallas, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, St. Louis, Memphis, Birmingham, Cheyenne, Wyoming, Denver, Colorado. I think we're adding a second show there soon. Colorado Springs, Red Bank, New Jersey, Huntington, New York, Boston, Massachusetts. We had a second show at the Wilbur because the first one sold out. TrevorWallace.com. That's a lot of dates, and I'm so freaking excited. And we're gonna. And if you're a Tempe, if you're a Phoenix, Arizona fan, and you've been in my DMs, where's Phoenix? Very soon, we will announce something very special. TrevorWallace.com. Michael Blaustein, where are you gonna be yelling about feet?
Ladies and gents, Michael Blaustein is gonna be yelling about feet when, guys, tonight I'm gonna be in Charleston, South Carolina. All right, go get tickets. Few tickets left. September 25th, I'm going to be in Durham, North Carolina. September 26th, I'll be in Port Smith. September 27th, I will be in Oklahoma City. October 9th, I'll be in Des Moines, and I'm going to read some off. And if you hear your city, go get tickets. Lincoln, Nebraska, Kansas City, Buffalo, Grand Rapids, Detroit, Salt Lake City, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Minneapolis, Madison, Chicago, Stanford, and my hometown, Bensalem, PA. I love you. BlauComedy.com. That is BlauComedy.com.
This ad is brought to you by In Da Cloud. One word. You ever sit down and watch one episode, and suddenly it's 3 a.m., and you're crying over a baking show from New Zealand? Yeah, that's when I realized I needed In Da Cloud in my life. In Da Cloud makes legal hemp-derived THC products that are actually good. None of that mystery brownie stuff your friend swore was totally safe. Gummies, exotic flowers, vapes, pre-rolls, all tasty, strong, and lab-tested, so you know exactly what you're getting. First time you ever tried it, one gummy thinking, I'll just chill for a bit. First time I tried it, one gummy thinking, I'll just chill for a bit. 45 minutes later, I'm wrapped in a burrito blanket, emotionally invested in whether otters hold hands in their sleep. They do, and I cried.
Whether you want better sleep, a light social buzz, or something little more potent with their beast mode collection,
beast.
In the cloud has you covered. And the best part is it's shipped discreetly, federally legally, and they got $70 ounce year-round. No gimmicks, dude. If you're 21 or older, grab 25% off your first order plus free shipping with code SOCKS at inthecloud.co. That is INDACLOUD.co. Code SOCKS, 25% off, free shipping. And snacks suddenly taste like an adult Michelin star restaurant. Enjoy responsibly, and huge thanks to In Da Cloud for sponsoring today's episode. One more time, that is code SOCKS at inthecloud.co.
You heard that right. $70 ounces year-round.
Goddamn.
Who do you want after you? Do you want PETA or Twitter? That's really what it is.
PETA all day.
Yeah, exactly. You slap a tiger, you're good. You have Twitter turn on you, not good.
PETA's, and I mean this with all respect to PETA, but they're powerless. Suck my dick.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, I tackled two all PETA girls in a, and I like, yeah, I tackled two PETA girls at an event one time.
Is this true?
Yeah, 100%. You can find it.
Well, I need
were
the story right now.
Something?
No, we were doing a Netflix golf tournament.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm hosting, but I'm also producing. So like I got someone in my ear going, "Hey Bert, can bring up the race car guys." So I bring up the race car guys. Apparently, race car. Yeah, this is me.
Really?
Yeah, that's not me. I waited for the woman.
see the shadow.
I was like, here we go. And here comes Bert Kreischer. All right, come here, bitch. Okay, okay. So, but what's funny is...
What were they even trying to do?
Why were they freaking out?
So, F1 has a poor record with animal rights, for whatever reason. I'm not really sure what they are. And so... I didn't know that at the time. All the time, I just have a producer in my ear, and he's like, we've got bogeys. And I was like, motherfucker. Now, I've been in production long enough that I know.
I mean, you're on a golf course, so how do you even know what the fuck they're talking about? Like so a bogey
funny.
Or a...
It's so funny. I knew exactly what they're talking about.
Got it.
Because we've had enough in production. A bogey means someone that just comes onto your set
and
starts yelling. And so I was like, shit. Now, I didn't know what they were yelling about, so I barely tackled it. The picture that went online was way worse.
You should frame that.
And so, look at the picture. It looks so much worse.
Oh, my God.
You look like you're enjoying it. You look like you're really having a good time. This looks like you should be on Pornhub, not on the fucking, not on Twitter.
I don't need to see myself on that. Get me away from this. The Iditarod. Mush, mush.
Yes, yes, yes.
They have a poor record with the Iditarod, the dogs.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie to you. I kind of agree with PETA on this. If you've ever seen those fucking mush dogs, it's a rough life.
Save that for the cows and the bulls.
Yeah, I agree with PETA on this stint. I actually was like, they reached out to me and they're like, hey, I appreciate you not being so rough with our young lady. We'd love to talk to you about this platform, about this. And I was like, yeah, I don't mind hearing them out. And then everyone that has a job was like, do not talk to PETA. Do not talk to PETA. And I was
even Scientology's like, they are dangerous.
Dude, Harvey Weinstein called me. He was like, do not talk to PETA.
Bill Cosby was like, you know. All right.
Bill Cosby. I don't know. I watch a lot of Instagram. Probably the only thing I really watch. I don't maybe listen to podcasts. But like I waste a good fucking hour in bed. At like 6:30, I woke up. I had an interview at 8 o'clock. I got out of there at 7:15, and I was dizzy. Like I was like... But you see people write for the audience. Yeah. You see people, comics, write for what they think is working.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very popular to try to write as Shane Gillis right now. I've watched a lot of people accommodate their act to be Shane. Mm-hmm. Shane is wildly talented. But I was there when Shane was writing and no one liked it. So when Shane wrote for himself, he had a joke that even I was like, I'm not sure that joke's ever going to work. And it's one of his most popular jokes.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it, but Shane always wrote for himself. He liked the thing that made him laugh. He didn't give a fuck about the audience.
Yeah.
We did 19,000 people in an outdoor stadium. And this was the joke. He was like, fuck Navy SEALs. And I was just like, but
tough
he.
Tough premise in the U.S.
Yeah, it's a tough fucking sell.
Yeah.
And
he.
And then I watched that joke as he just committed to it and stuck with it.
Yeah.
And then one night I watch it and I'm like, and we're in Arizona and he's like, fuck Navy SEALs. And then all of a sudden he starts going, they're pussies, right? They're pussies. He's got the fucking goggles. And they start breaking it down. I go, God damn it, this joke's fucking working.
Yeah.
But man.
But it's so hard.
But it's so him. And so like the more you veer to exactly what you're good at.
Yeah.
If you build it,
they'll come.
But it's so hard as a young comic to be like, this is what I find funny. This is what I'm going to write. This is how I'm funny. Because when you first start, you don't even fucking know what is funny to you. You have no idea. So to the point you're making, the Shane thing, it's like, it's so impressive. He just stayed true to himself because that is so... I've went through 6 iterations of myself, right. But I always... Thank God, I always phase back to what makes me funny. But there are moments where I'm like, maybe I'm the hold the mic stand guy. It's like, I'm not that. But it's so fucking hard... To just stay true to yourself. And but I think the more years you're in it, the more years you get like successful based on what you're doing and what's honest to you, then you get all the receipts.
You try it on for size.
When I first moved to LA,
everybody was doing D'Elia. It was very like that cadence and that like how he was on stage. Everybody was doing that. So it's like, it's kind of like, who is the guy right now?
And I remember that. I remember that.
A lot of that.
Probably. I remember probably when I got here, everyone was doing Dane.
Yeah. So there's always like one North Star.
I watched everyone do Mitch.
Oh.
I watched everyone do Stanhope.
Yep.
I watched everyone, myself and Tom included, do a tell.
Really?
Yep. Oh, dude. I mean, because you don't know what funny is. And so you're trying to figure out, like, you're like, I wrote a joke. I had gotten cut off on an airplane. I was sitting next to Patrice O'Neill, and the lady cut me off. And I didn't want to be cut off, but I was too drunk to speak. So I took my finger and I put it on her lips and went, shh. And then she was like, and then walked away. Patrice is like, what the fuck did you just do? And then we were in Scotland, and he told me that's a joke. That's a joke, man. Like, because I really didn't still understand jokes. And
goddamn.
This ad is brought to you by Factor. Fall always feels like a reset between back to school and busy routines and shorter days. Finding time to cook can be tough. That's why I, Trevor Wallace, love Factor. Their chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something comforting and delicious, no matter how hectic the season gets.
You know what I freaking love about Factor, okay? More variety and more meals, okay? Choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp at no extra cost. Thank the Lord, dude, okay? Savor global flavors, okay? For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more.
My favorite thing is the fresh, never frozen.
Yes, dude.
2 minutes in the microwave every single time. I don't know how they perfected it. Every meal you get 2 minutes. Every single time. I use these every day. I'm going to go home after this podcast and eat one. And I'm so excited to have zero thought about cleanup. It's just, boom, I've had a long day. Throw it in. Beep, beep, beep. Done. Eat. Delicious. And it's flavors I couldn't even imagine.
And it's delicious. It literally feels like a chef freaking made it. And no more grocery stores. Down. I am done with grocery stores. So eat smart at factormeals.com/socks50off and use code socks50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code socks50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready to eat meals delivered with Factor.
Goddamn. And I literally said to myself, how would it tell? Because you're trying to think, formula. Like, what's the, like, how do I tell this? Because you don't know how to tell it.
Yep.
So you're like, you know what cops hate? When you touch their faces. Like, yeah. I almost want to say that, you know, it's like people would go, you stole that from Mattel. I didn't steal it, but I definitely stole the pacing. And yep, I definitely stole the inflection. Mm-hmm. And I definitely stole, like, there's just part of when you're young, you don't know what you're doing.
You know what you're doing.
Right. And then one day, you do something, and someone goes, dude, that's fucking funny. And
yeah. And you, true to you.
And you don't, you. Yep. I bet you, I mean, every time that's happened to me, I didn't even think it was a joke. I was like, that's not a joke.
Right.
And they're like, whatever it is, it's funny. I tell you the three things. One,
that's
I had a story about.
That's
no, no, three, three, oh, three.
That was six. Oh, that's three. We got it.
Isla putting her finger in the inner ass and put it in the dog's mouth was the first one.
No, we're going to stop
on,
there.
We miss a,
what?
We missed a chapter.
It's a story I had that I was. Just no one in the audience, and I just was fucking around, and it had happened 3 days before, and I just was like, yeah, and I told the story about my girls, you know, woke up, and, you know, I came downstairs, and they're laughing. I go, it's so funny, and George was like, yeah, I see baby Isla's new trick. I go, what's the trick? She goes, it's better if you see it, Dad, trust me. And she shoved her finger up her ass and put it in the dog's mouth. I go, what the fuck's wrong with you? And then George goes, stop, you don't get it. And I go, no, I don't get it. And
she goes, what is it again? Yeah.
And she goes, the dog keeps doing it. She doesn't know it's shit, Dad. And I was like, wait, what? She's like, the dog hasn't stopped. It doesn't know it's shit. And I go, Isla, do it again.
How much peanut butter was your daughter eating?
I go, Isla, do it again. Isla did it again. The dog took the finger again. I was like, shut the fuck up. I go, do it one more time. Isla did it again. I go, and my wife comes down and I go, you got to see baby Isla's new trick. She's like, what is it? And I go, you got to see it. And so that was the first joke I wrote of my own, meaning.
Watch daddy try.
Yeah. And so I didn't even have the wherewithal to try to expand the story into something bigger. I just was like, this is really authentically my voice.
Right.
This is me. No one's writing this joke. Right, no one's going to take this joke. No one's thinking of this joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is me. And then I was like, okay, but I would push back. I hate to bring this up, but when I told the machine on Rogan, Rogan's like, dude, that's your act. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, no one's doing 13-minute stories mm-hmm. on stage. Like, no one, it doesn't work, Joe. And he was like, stop. You need to try to make it work. And I was like, it doesn't. And then I did it. And as I did it, I started to learn my voice. Yep. And in doing that, I realized, well, I can tell a story. I can tell a story. And I figured out how stories worked. And I'd watch, I won't say anyone's names, but I'd watch, because there were storytelling rooms started getting popular like right around this time. Mm-hmm. And I'd watch people tell stories. And it was clear they had seen how a story was done and stolen from that. Like, a perfect example. Anyone who ever used the phrase, I told you that story, yep, only to tell you this story.
Yep.
That was Ron White. That's Ron White's pacing. He created that. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that only to tell you this.
Yeah,
19 yeah. years earlier.
That's good.
That's Ron White. Yeah. That's, yeah. He created that.
Yeah.
He did that. And so, but I you learn a lot. And then the last one, I had this story about pajamas, about buying my wife pajamas for Christmas, that I was getting ready to shoot a special, and I was fucking around in the OR, and Adam Egret came up to me, and he was like, dude, that pajama story is great. And you're like, huh? I was like, that's not a joke. And he was like, well, whatever it is, do it. Yeah, I was like, what? And so, but like, it takes that, and it takes being in it forever.
Yeah,
and being around a lot of comics and having a lot of good friends.
Yeah, well, it's sitting on those great stories. I was telling a story about how in college I got a happy ending and rode my bike home in college. And I'm telling my friends a story in the car on the road, and they're like, why isn't this on stage? Where's the bit? Why don't you do this? And I'm like, I always just thought it was a funny story, but I'm like, I don't know how I... But then you just say it on stage because the premise itself is so funny.
Yep.
And you kind of just trim it down.
Yeah, that's the best... I remember being on stage at one of those... I want to say it was Jeremiah, had like a new material show. And we were on stage in the belly room, and someone yelled out, Anne Frank. And I go, oh, I used to think Anne Frank and Helen Keller were the same person. And Joe came up to me. He's like, the fuck did you just say? And I was like, yeah, I used to. But it's a true story. I thought they were the same person. So I went to the Anne Frank house thinking it was Helen Keller's house.
Where's all the Braille?
Yeah. And I was like, that's so crazy. And I was telling Helen Keller jokes
to
my
friends.
She always
thinks she's in the attic?
Yeah. And I was like... I don't know why she went to the attic. She could have been anywhere.
Yeah, dark everywhere.
How terrifying to hide, and you can't see anything anyway. You don't even know if they're in the room with
hide
you.
Hide and go seek with yourself? You're like, I'm good
it's like,
at
you
this.
Ever hide? You ever hide under a bed, but you can't see if they see you? And so he's like, that's got to go on stage. I was like, oh, it's not a joke. But those are my favorite jokes. I did that. I've done that with Tommy. Where Tommy said one of the funniest things I've ever fucking heard. And I don't know if it's going in the special, so I won't repeat it. But I was like, is that in your act? And he was like, no, it just happened the other day. And I was like, dude, it's the best. And like, those are my favorite.
Yeah, because, well, you're not trying to be funny. It's just a true thing that happened that's so, like, maybe normal to you at the time, but you get the outside perspective. Like, the peanut butter, the dog ass thing,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Crazy.
But you're like, oh, I thought it was just a fun family gig.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the things you're embarrassed to share.
Right,
like,
I remember
one time Leanne farted during oral sex, and she's...
Were you... Wait, who was doing what to
I was move? Going down on her.
Ooh.
And she farted.
Little present.
Yeah. Little goatee action.
All fucking, right.
And now, in that moment, it's awkward, and I was like, okay, I'm in a precarious position.
Yeah.
And I came up, and she started crying. And I went, hey, it's okay. She goes, no. And I went, what? She goes, you're going to talk about this on stage. I swear to God, had she not said that, I would have never brought it up.
Really?
She almost shit in my mouth. I'm not going to tell that story. But then she said
that.
The
dog's in the corner, me next.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that goes on stage. But that's like the... I don't know, man. It's so funny. I took 15 months off because...
Yeah, I want to talk about this, like, because we tour so crazy, and in my head, I'm like,
have you seen this man's tour?
No, I know, I know. We are.
This man is damn near homeless.
Yeah.
I said to Leanne today, I can't imagine being bi-coastal. Like, how do those people have two houses? And she goes, how many houses do you have? I said, well, I guess just one, my tour bus, and then I come and visit you here. Yeah. Like, I was like, yeah.
Your house is your tour bus, yeah.
What I was trying to say is I think in my, I'll just speak for myself. I think in my head, I'm like, well, if I ever stop, people aren't going to care anymore, right? So, but that 15, well, walk me through that. What was the impetus for that? And did you feel better when you started comedy again?
So.
You think Bert knows the word impetus?
Of course I know true, impetus. True. My dick gets
blue
hard
chew.
All the time.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It really started with Leanne and both our girls going to college at the same time.
Yeah.
And Leanne was like, yo, I can't have you just disappear from the feelings that are being an empty nester.
Oh.
I kind of need you to be here and feel this with me.
Yeah.
And that was the very, but I was like, that'll be fine in my head. I was like, I'll be just present. And I was like, I'll do a European tour in 6 months. And I'll bring Leanne to Europe and we're going to just travel. We'll travel, we'll do Europe, we'll do Australia, and it'll be perfect. And then... I took time off and I got really depressed and I was like,
yeah.
And I didn't want to do stand up and I didn't enjoy doing podcasts. And I was like really kind of in a funk. And then I was, and then Leanne's like, you got to get through this. And then I booked some projects. I started doing projects.
Yeah, you saw your movie.
And I, yeah, and I was like, and then I didn't want to do spots. Like people would be like, you want to do a spot? And I'm like, nah. I was like, I don't want to do it. And I was, and a lot of it was at the end of the last special, I caught myself saying, I need a good Isla joke. I need a good black guy joke, ooh, a fuck joke, and a good and an Isla joke.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, what am I doing? Am I filling in holes? Mm-hmm. Is it stand up now just a series of holes that I plop things into, and I'm writing for the fans that like me that go, what's his Isla bit this year?
Mm. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I got, and Leanne heard me say that. She's like, you got to take time off. And to start again, I think the first time I did stand up was in Oxnard, and to start again with zero things. Zero. The cool thing is I got to sit back and write. Like as things would happen, I just write the thing.
Cool.
Like yeah, write yeah. the thing and just go this, and then this, and to sit back. But the scary thing was to take it on stage and it not work, and then go through that list in like 15 minutes and be like, what do we talk about now?
Yeah.
And like people shit on crowd work comic all the time. Crowd work's a great way to create material. Yeah. It's a great way to create material. And I mean, I would like any of the stuff I did in crowd work that worked, I go, I'm going to put that in my act. I would never post it because I was like, I don't want to burn the act. But also in doing that, I realized just like how, like the terrifyingness, I never had it. Cause like I'd do an hour, I would start, I'd take 2 weeks off and I'd go out and start working on my next hour and I'd build my next special and start my next tour. And then I would, for that period I had, I'd phase out material.
Yep.
So I was always crushing. So I was doing old material with half new, no one could tell. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it dropped, I had half new, I was doing the same thing. Yep. And so, but it was like, but I noticed like right before I do a special, I was killing in ways that I was like, nice, it's ready. And I was like, I kind of want to do that for a whole tour. Like mm-hmm. I want to go take material out on the beginning of the tour that's all brand new.
Already special ready.
Yeah. Already special ready. So then I was like, all right, I set up this tour and I thought about it two ways. I was like, I start out, I was like, fucking let's go big. Like, you know? And then as I started doing it, I was like, yo, I want this special to be good. And I got to do twice the amount of time. So I haven't announced, I only have announced up until Friday. And I may recant all this and go, I'm staying in arenas and do arenas. Yeah. Arenas are fun. I love them.
Are they fun?
They're so much fucking fun. You've done them. They're so much fucking fun. Yeah, the pop is so big.
I did the one with you and Tom at MGM in Vegas.
That was so great.
Unreal.
Yeah. It's fucking the best feeling. Granted, now listen, the best shows, if I'm going to shoot a special, it's going to be in a theater.
Yeah.
Like Tom just called me up and he was like, dude, get back in theaters. He's because Tom's been doing arenas and now he's getting ready to do a special in November.
Too much theaters,
and
right?
You do all these, you got to do theaters to warm up for a theater because it's done in the theater.
Yeah.
So, but I'm really excited about it. I wrote something the other day that surprised me that I went, whoa. Like, so good that I go, did I write that?
Right.
That's when you know it's good.
Is this a tell from 1998? What is this?
Yeah.
Sometimes it comes to you so naturally, you're like, I had to have heard this somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's a true story that happened.
I'll tell you what it is. You got to edit it out.
Yeah.
This is my favorite. I'm gonna shorten it. And I was like, Bert, like, fuck, we're back, baby. We're back.
baby.
Yeah, it probably feels great.
And And leave the laugh in. That's the material I'll be doing on the Permission to Party World Tour.
It'll just be all elevator music and then that pop at the end.
But it's like when you write excited for yourself, where you're like nice, like that you get fired up and you go, I'm ready to get back on the road. I'm ready to, so that's where I am right now. And so I have probably an hour 30 of new material.
Great,
and there's no parenting stuff. There's no. I mean, there is, but they're in college, haven't figured that out, and I can't really, like,
the new chapter.
So it's a new chapter of my life. I'm excited to see where that goes. But like I said, a lot of stuff about black guys,
which is good. We all
it
got
is good,
got
which is awesome.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
Ladies and gents, this episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. You and I make decisions every freaking day, but Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right, okay? Ladies and gents, some examples of players frickin' I will pick, okay, will be Saquon Barkley, I will say he's going to go more than one rushing TD with those freaking beautiful thighs. All right, and I'm going to go Joey Burrow.
What about Josh Allen for more than 270 passing yards? I'm feeling good about that. J.A.
J.A.
Nobody calls him that.
They call him J.O.
Because he's just offense. Just offense.
There we go.
Prize Picks puts their users first. So with all withdrawals are fast, safe, and secure, Prize Picks offers Venmo, Apple Pay, MasterCard, and more for quick and easy deposits into your account this football season.
Prize Picks invented the flex play, which means you can still cash out if your lineup isn't perfect, okay? You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. So download the app today and use code SOCKS to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code SOCKS to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right.
Goddamn. There's a woman that said to me today, do you ever regret taking your shirt off? And I was like, bitch, this is morning radio. Can you shut the fuck up? How deep are we going to get? Yeah, of course.
I hate morning
Of course
radio.
I fucking wish I had never taken my shirt off. You fucking cunt. But it's off, okay? That's where we're at. I can't put it back on.
And then you ripped it off right then?
You ripped it off again? Yeah.
I did a breast run today. The guy was like, so, Rockford, Illinois, what can people expect if they come to your show? I go, hey, motherfucker, it's an arena. No one casually strolls up to arena going, wonder what's going on here tonight. Yeah. I go, they know who the fuck I am. Just all I need you to do is say my name and where it is and when. That's it. I don't need to talk anymore, you dumb fuck.
What's validating about this is we still get hit up to do radio. I'm like, why are we doing that? But if guys like you are still doing radio, it never ends.
I say no to radio every single time.
Well, until one time where all of a sudden you do radio and people show up because of the radio. And that still happens.
Does it, though?
Oh, fucking Tampa, D.C.,
big
Philly,
radio cities, honestly.
Phoenix. Bob and Tom, man. Bob and Tom I think it's just Bob, Tom. But they still get a huge splash, man. And those relationships, and people may mock it, but those relationships are important, you know? Mm-hmm. I think they are. Look, there are people who say, I'm gonna do press for my new TV show. I'm just gonna do Rogan. And you're like, well, a lot of people listen to him, yes. But you can also do Stiff Socks and Your Mom's House and Shane and Matt's Secret Podcast. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things out there that you can do. You don't have to do just one. And some people will be like, yeah, but I mean, like, what are your listeners? And you're like, doesn't matter. If it's 1,000, it's still 1,000 people you wouldn't have had.
The radio person, do they make you take your shirt off for it?
Oh, no, it was a call-in.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, it was a call-in.
That'd be so awkward sitting just furious, cold-ass, stupid corporate building with his shirt off.
Yeah, I mean, radio's not dead. It's definitely not dead if you're Mexican.
Let's elaborate. Go ahead.
Dude, if you're Mexican.
All right.
And you can speak Spanish.
All right.
You're murdering it.
Why? Do you think it's just because there's not a...
Think of where you've heard radios.
Yeah.
You go to a work site, there's radios everywhere.
All right.
Like
what's another example?
Like work site. That's it. Like you do John Boy and Billy. John Boy and Billy is a big work site radio station.
Yeah, yeah.
But
oh, really?
Yeah, well, it was bigger for white people, it was bigger when Ralphie was doing it because immigration was different. But right now, anywhere you go where there's dudes working fucking manual labor, I'm not gonna say the whole country, but I'll tell you in Atlanta, in North Carolina, in Florida, is predominantly Latino. And they put on a fucking radio in a car and they drive to a radio going to work. But like most white people are throwing on podcasts or Spotify or
NPR.
They've got their NPR. Dude, NPR. I mean,
NPR is just a bunch of whispers in the corner.
I love when you have someone. I heard a lady that talked on NPR like this today.
Yeah.
And then Donald Trump.
Of like trumpets.
Yeah, they talk like, you ever heard Larry Mantle? And you're like, I'm not sure that's a dude.
This is Larry Mantle today.
Do you think people listen to it just because they're like, oh, I'm smarter because I'm, it's almost like reading a book
it's
when
like
you listen
you
to NPR.
Yourself with.
It's really, not even like reading a book. It's like buying a book and carrying it on the airplane and holding it.
First class, suck my dick.
Look at this, bitch.
I mean, I think there are liberal people, I guess, but like, I don't know.
I like that statement.
I don't know.
I mean, like, I was trying to explain to someone, like, they were like, I was my daughter's friends were like, because all my friends are, and by the way, it's so funny to watch my daughters. I said something that was a little insensitive, okay?
You?
Yes.
All right.
We're at my daughter's college. My whole family's there. I see a trans person, female.
This is already
and
off
I, to said, start. I said, oh, like, not like Punch Buggy, but I was like, hey, is that a trans person?
And not like Punch Buggy. So like, funny.
That would be so much fun if that was the game.
Slug Bug.
Fanny. And so, and I go, is that a trans person? And then the girls in the car were like, actually, all four of them are trans. And then I went, oh, a trans slam. And no one laughed. No one
really?
Laughed.
Really?
No,
I would stop the car and say, I would explain the joke. Here's why this was funny.
I was like, guys, it was the perfect moment. There's four. A trans, a home, yeah. a grand slam's four.
Right.
Yeah. Had it been three, I would have allowed you to have been like, actually, it's three. It's not a trans slam. Yeah. And so, and then they were started to explain to me that wokeness. The children at dinner, at lunch, or dinner, whatever, early dinner, started to explain like wokeness to me about like, just like, I forget what it was. And I was like, I haven't changed. Like I've stayed here. It's just that like things have gotten so crazy that like now I look like I'm over here, but I'm still right here. I haven't.
Right. The like, other side's gone rapidly fast.
Yeah, I'm not a virtue signal politic comic. I'm not at all. I make the joke if it's funny. That's it. I don't want you to, I don't care what your beliefs are and I don't want to know what your beliefs are. Like if I bought a gun, I'll tell you the story about when I bought a gun. It's on one of my specials. If I want to do a pro-female joke. I did it in the last special. I'll do a pro-female joke. It's going to have my spin on it because it has to be funny. But that's, and I just sat and I listened to these kids and I was like, their politics are dictated to them by their peer group. Their politics aren't dictated to them by their feelings or their emotions or their insights. Mm-hmm. And so that was like, that's like, I don't know how we got into this, but like, that's the thing that bothers me.
Translam.
Yeah. I thought it was a good joke.
I mean, I can't believe, and no one laughed?
No.
Probably the cleanest.
It's just bang, bang, bang. It makes sense. It's got visuals. It's great.
I can't use it now because I've said it in a podcast. But
you can still say it.
No.
You can still do it.
No, you burn material on podcast?
If I say it on a podcast, I'll never say it on stage.
Really?
Yeah, I think some of the stories come from podcasts.
That's what I'm saying.
No, none of mine.
Really? Even like riffing with Tom or anything you do?
I did it one time. One time I had a...
Wait, dude, the biggest bit of your entire life came from a podcast.
Yeah, but...
What are you talking about?
No, but I told it there, but I worked it on stage and I made it good.
I understand.
Like, it's like... Like if I did Trans Slam, there would be I guarantee there'd be someone in the audience in Vancouver or wherever I am Friday night Vancouver who would be like, I heard that on Stiff Socks. That's exactly what they'd say.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I have friends. Like yeah, that. And yeah. I had a joke that I said. I don't know what my new. By the way, it's like when we talk about taking time off. I had a formula for doing specials. It was. Fairly successful was first words out of your mouth are a joke. They're not like, hey, how are you or anything.
Yep.
The first words, it feels awkward to you, but it
right
works.
Off the bat.
The second you grab the mic, and the joke I wanted to tell was I took a shit so big in Japan that the guy in the stall next to me threw up. And I go, we were in Japan, so I thought he was trying to talk to me. He was like, oh. And I was like, I don't have any toilet paper, sir. I can't help you. So I told that when you laugh, I go, I used to be really funny. So I told that on Two Bears and Tom fell out of his chair laughing.
Oh, fuck, that's funny.
Yeah, that's great.
So I go up on stage like a month later and I go, I took a shit so big in Japan. A guy in the stall next to me threw up and someone goes, aha. And I went, He's like, we've heard it. And I went, okay. No, but that's the present of comedy is it's got to be a gift. It's got to be brand new. So I changed it for the special. I changed it. I took a shit so big. Wait.
In Germany.
No. I took a shit in a transgender. No, I took a shit in a. I took a shit in a. What was
it? Transmission.
Yeah.
I took a shit in a gender neutral bathroom. This is true.
This can't be true.
This is true. It's in Madison, Wisconsin.
Every bathroom is genderless in Madison.
Caddy Corner from the club. So you remember the club there?
Yeah, of course.
It's on the V part of like.
I've eaten at that place.
It's a great breakfast joint.
Very good. It's female owned. It's a nice place.
It's a female owned. And
yeah,
it's a,
I've been there.
It's a gender neutral. It's a gender neutral bathroom.
Yes.
And I was there with Ari Shaffir.
Dick
and whoever I was on tour with. And we were having breakfast, and I was like, I had to take a shit. And I took a shit in a gender-neutral bathroom that was so bad, it made the woman in the stall next to me question her politics. And so I was like, it's not the Japan joke, but like it.
It's me having big shits.
Yeah. It's, and I was like, and then I could go into
more,
but like, yeah. I always wanted to have a fucking firm joke, open it for, I can almost do the beginning of every special. Secret Time was, Secret Time. Sometimes when I get out of the shower, I dry my asshole on the bed. Like that was, and that was so true. Like I dry out and sit on the bed and dry my asshole on the bed. Leanne caught me one time. It was like, Secret Time. Sometimes when I wipe my ass, I spit on the toilet paper. It's called a Mississippi wet wipe. But it was like those fast ones are so good to set the tone.
I always open something quick. Yeah. Just because I feel like the instinctual, I have to prove to every audience, like, hey, trust me, I'll be funny. Just,
yes. Yeah, I'm excited about tonight. I have two spots, one at the Improv and one at the Store.
Yeah.
And I'm dialed in to get back on the road. But the other part, you know, it's like I've gotten really used to like having a personal trainer and having dinner with my wife and drink. Like the, you know, the hardest part is not drinking whenever you want to drink, because that's like the crazy part. I can drink right now if I want. But when I have a show, I can't drink until 10 o'clock at night.
Mm.
Like, that's the first drink I'm allowed.
Are you not drunk? Are you not drinking before the show at all?
No, never.
Oh, never.
I have. I'm a grown-up.
Right, but like, right.
But like, yeah, but
I'm not
no,
a bitch.
Yeah, but no, never. Usually, like, if I have shows, I'm sober all day. I work out. I'm very regimented in that. Like, and I know it's not sexy to say. You know, I think sometimes I wish I had rebranded myself into like, so everyone thought I was hammered all the time.
Yeah.
But the truth is I wake up around 11, I go have lunch, we do an activity, like go to Shields or like go to a fucking mall or go play disc golf or do something fun throughout the day, and then come back, take a nap at 4, sleep until 5:30, get to the gym by 6, get on stage at 7:15.
Oh, wow.
And then I have them pour me a drink, and then I don't know if I'm telling the machine on this tour. Mm. Like I haven't been telling it. Like I've been doing some great outdoors comedy festival shows,
yeah.
And I haven't been, I got really lucky, in that, like, I didn't know if I wanted to keep telling it, or I didn't know if I was like, I didn't want people to like, be like, you know, and I got a phone call from, Tracy Morgan and,
what a weird phone call.
It was a FaceTime. FaceTime. And I was like, huh. He's like,
I'm in a Walmart truck.
No. Okay. He was like, I heard you tell a story about me. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I want to hear it. I was like, oh, now's not a great time. I just woke up. And I was like, okay. And so I talked to Frosty and I flew out to New York. We sat in a conference room and I told him the Tracy Morgan story.
You could have done it on FaceTime?
Yeah. I mean,
No.
A conference room? On the other, dude, he's that rich? It was, he's like, I need a conference table.
It was sketchy because, you know, he had heard the story and he said it never happened and he didn't like it. And so I kind of just separated from it. It was like, cool. I was like, you know, look, we all have our recollections of whatever, you know, and so I just kind of stepped back and was like, hey, man, I'm never going to deny. Because, you know, there's things I remember in life. I sat next to Warwick Dunn graduating. Now, I know that's true. I sat next to him in graduation. Warwick Dunn played for the Bucks.
You sure it wasn't Tracy Morgan?
I'm pretty sure. I sat next to him. And I ran into Warwick Dunn last weekend, and I said, we sat next to each other at graduation. And he goes, really? And he doesn't remember that. I understand that now as someone famous, that there are certain things that you don't remember that other people remember because you were the guy, right? Mm. I definitely remember the first time I met Tracy Morgan. I definitely fucking remember that. But if he doesn't, I understand that. And so I'm not going to go and perpetuate something that he doesn't want me to perpetuate.
Sure.
But if he calls me and says he heard about the story, wants to hear it, I want him to hear it in the best way possible.
Oh,
I don't want to roll the dice on a friendship or working partnership of me and him working on a movie or possibly, or a TV show possibly, based on I want to be in control of that. So I talked to Frosty. In all honesty, we were going to do it for Ari's storytelling show.
Oh, shit.
So we were going to do it together. So I flew out to New York. I went to CAA. We had chickens and biscuits and eggs from
I got nothing to say.
It was your request, right?
Yeah, your request.
Yeah. All you.
And I told Tracy Morgan the story. And he loved it. He was like, yeah. He started remembering certain things.
Cool.
Like, what's really fucking fascinating about the story. And I may tell it on the tour. So I'm not, if you're planning on seeing me on the road, just earmuffs. But what's really funny is one of the parts that he disliked in the story that really turned him off to the story was when we smoked weed together, and he hit it, passed it to me, and I hit it, and I felt garbage shoot down my throat. And I was like, what's wrong with your weed? And he's like, oh, shit, you never smoked Sherm before? And I was like, what? He's like, angel dust, baby, PCP. You never smoked Sherm? And I was like, who the fuck taught you how to do drugs? You don't give someone PCP, and they go, tag, you're on PCP. Offer someone PCP. Tracy Morgan stopped me. He goes, it was a blunt. I went, what? He goes, I only smoke blunts. It was a blunt. You'd never had a blunt before. I never had a blunt before. I grew up in Tampa. We smoked joints or bong hits. I had never had a blunt. And so when in my recollection of the story, it was this garbage weed that I told it, I was like, it looked like it was rolled at a Molly Hatchet concert and passed around in socks for 5 years. And it was a blunt. And then when he said that to me, I went, fuck, it was a blunt. I stopped the story and he goes, it was a blunt. And I went, and he goes, keep going. And I went, this whole time, because I went back to the club, I went up to Tony Woods, and I was like, I just smoked PCP with Tracy Morgan.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, you didn't. He does not smoke PCP. I was like, no, he does. And he did. And he's like, trust me.
So did I.
He goes, trust me, he doesn't smoke PCP. And yeah. I was like, are you sure? And he was like, maybe. But when Tracy said that to me, I was like, whoa. And then I got done. The whole story is great. You've heard it, I'm sure. But it's I've done the story. And he just looked at me and goes, you have my permission to tell that. And I went,
that's awesome.
And I was like, oh my God. I go, Tracy, I'm going to start crying. I was like, you have no idea how much that means to me. It's like, for the longest time, I just had to bite my tongue and sit back and go like, everyone thinks I'm a liar about this story, but I want a relationship with Tracy. So I'm going to just respect whatever he says is the truth. So I'll just sit back and go, I don't know, man.
Going to New York was the most respectful thing you could have done.
Yeah.
And I'm here for you. Here's the bit.
Yeah.
Access granted or not.
Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you exactly how I remember it. But when he said it was a blunt, I was like, what the fuck?
So no PCP?
No. But what's crazy is you smoke a blunt for the first time and you do feel a little different high.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a kid who just took bong hits and smoked out of pipes, his whole fucking, no one's rolled a joint. No one rolled joints in. Hutch maybe rolled a couple joints, but like no one ever had a fucking blunt.
Do you ever have the guy growing up who'd roll it with like Bible papers and he'd be like, nah, Bible papers are thinner. That was you?
Me.
Yeah.
Biggest panic attack I ever had on weed was on Bible papers.
I'm talking to God and seeing him too.
I went in and I apologized to the Lord in a bathroom.
Went in where? Oh, you go like into John a church?
I was at my buddy Blake's house and there was a Bible.
That's a church house for sure.
And I rolled it in a Bible and we smoked it. And then I was like, oh God, how come I can feel myself swallow? And I was like, what muscle starts to swallow? I don't know which one. Can I breathe? How do I breathe? Do I do breathing or is it going to happen?
Oh, we had a guy named Cody, and he would read the Bible verse before rolling it up.
No.
And of course. Yeah, Cody Paris. He would read the Bible verse as it was like a ritual of an animal. Like, you know, it's like, well, we got to read it to pay respects. Yeah. And he'd read it and then roll it up. And then we would do – and I'm Jewish. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Like, just the first one. The first book.
I want the old one.
Yeah, I would just say amen. And then that was my contribution.
Dude, the ink has got to be horrendous for you to smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're smoking ink, dude.
But we'd smoke it like cans.
Yeah, apples and everything. Yeah.
That was there's two things I won't do. I won't smoke out of a can ever again, and I won't smoke out of the Bible. I just told this story the other day to my daughter. We walked into this is the last time I smoked out of a can. We were in college and there was a girl, Chrissy Maglione.
Sounds like she's got a big rack.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
No, but just beautiful. I never really looked at her tits. She was a little bit more like her sister, a sister to me. But like good boobs, I think. No. Our families knew each other in Philadelphia. Then they all moved to Florida together. So I knew her and her brother Freddie.
Yeah.
And sister Beth. And
Beth had good tits.
I don't remember. She was younger. I don't remember her at all.
All right.
Freddie had a good body.
That's
weird that's what I remember.
Right, yeah.
It's not weird at all.
Yeah. So zooming on the toenails, we says Freddie had a good body.
We walked into our house.
Grand slam. Sorry.
We walked into our apartment in college like one summer, and Chrissy came in, and I pulled out my pipe till we were all going to smoke pot. And she goes, oh, is this one of those unbreakable pipes? And I go, I don't know. And she threw it against the wall and it shattered. And then we had to smoke out of a can.
It's like that Ray J clip.
I was just going to say that.
The sunglasses?
No.
Ray J is telling a guy on Complex, he goes, my glasses that I make are indestructible. And he goes, come on. He's like, you can break these. He's like, try it. He snaps them right in half.
Immediately. And then Ray J's face is just like, he had nothing to say.
Are you serious?
Do you have that clip, Jack? It's so funny.
The funniest.
It's like,
oh, yeah, here it is.
Wait, how did you have it so quick? How did you have it so quick?
He's good.
I feel like you're so frivolous with your products, man. You're slapping the table, they're flying everywhere, you're tossing the glasses.
They're unbreakable.
Unbreakable?
They're Test unbreakable. Test Break them.
Step on it right now.
No, you step on them.
It's your product.
You step on them.
Go ahead.
Speedy step on them.
I can't do that.
You can.
I bet you I can break these.
They're unbreakable.
Speedy. They're not unbreakable.
Speedy.
Don't tell me these are unbreakable.
Listen.
Don't challenge me.
Listen.
Don't challenge me, Rachel. I will break them.
Listen, Speedy, they're unbreakable. They cannot break. It's impossible. I don't care. But it's fine.
Oh, yeah, I don't care. That's what he said.
I don't care. Todd, it's a great promo. He probably sold a lot.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
That's genius.
That's brilliant.
How can we apply that to our tours? I don't care.
You know what I did one time with Joe Coy? We were doing his podcast, and I was like, I used to love doing this. I go, do you ever call the club and find out like what they say about you? Mm. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, watch. I go, where are you playing next? And he goes, the Brea Improv. And so I was like, all right, so we're doing a podcast. And we're doing his podcast, the Koi Pond. And I call up and I go, hey, who you guys got coming up? And they're like, Joe Coy. He's this weekend. I said, is he funny? She goes, doesn't matter. Shows are sold out. You won't see it. Get a ticket for him. And I went, for real? She goes, he's probably the best comic working right now. I was like, really? She was like, yeah. I was like, that's crazy. I was like, well, what? Like, if I was supposed to go, what would I expect? And she goes, the laugh, the hardest you've ever laughed in your entire life, he's that good. He gets standing ovations every show. I was like, wow. So I hung up, and Joe's like, where are you playing next? And I was like, I go, stand up live. And he goes, let's do it for you. I was there that weekend. I go, hello? And she goes, hello? I go, who you guys got coming up this weekend? And she goes, Joe Coy's coming in like 2 months. And I went, well, no, like, who's there this weekend? She goes, I don't know. I go, you don't have like a calendar in front of you? She goes, I don't know how to say his name. I said, can you try? And she goes, Bart Krinsker or something. And I go, is he funny? And she goes, I don't know. I've never heard of him. I go, really? And she goes, yeah. And there's no ticket sales. So like, I go, what is it? So what does it say on its website? She goes, I don't really know. Can I tell you? I got to take another call. And it just clicked off on me. And I was like, and Joe and I just sat there. And I was like, that's how it works.
Dude, I don't know if I have the ego or the. I don't know if I can handle that.
Where are you playing next?
Oh,
what club?
Fuck.
What club?
Oh shit! Dating Funny Bone in two weeks.
I think I probably have that number saved in my fucking phone.
Probably. Okay. Let me tell you something right now. Portland just sold out quick as fuck. Dayton, a little slow. So if I get hurt with the Chrysler, they go. Twink is not really selling that well. Oh my god!
I am nervous. I am gonna be so fucking nervous right now.
Great promo for Dayton.
Here we go. Hello?
Thank you for calling. You did find it amazing when that person was speaking with.
Oh, this is Bert Kreischer.
Hi. Do you have an order or are you looking to place an order?
I'm looking to see who's playing at the Dayton Funny Bone. I just did the call.
You want to know who's playing at the Funny Bone in Dayton?
Yeah.
Give me one moment. Do you have a certain date or like for this weekend?
The 19th. I think so, next weekend.
Okay, give me one moment.
This is bad. It was better when they were people.
It'd be Trevor Wallace is there the 19th and the 20th.
Oh.
The 20th. Trevor Wallace is there all next weekend.
Is he good?
I've never been. So here at E-Tix, we're just contracted tickers. Venues, tickets for venues. I've never stepped a foot into Funny Bone.
Oh, you never even stepped foot in Funny Bone. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we just sell their tickets for them.
How does his ticket sales look? Is it a? I mean, like that's the way I could judge whether or not he's a good comic is if he sold tickets.
There are tickets sold. There's let me see if there's tickets still available.
Is there more than half?
I don't know how many they have.
It seats 275 at the Dayton Funny Bone.
Yeah, I don't have a way to see like how many tickets is sold.
Is there any way? Is there any way? This is a crazy. I'm not a fan of white comics. Is there any way to see if the names that have been sold are white people? I'd rather see a black comic.
Yeah, So I can tell you when I click on to this, the performance detail, I mean, he has a picture up here and it does appear to be not a black male, but he does appear to be white or some type of other nationality.
But white with like a vibe or white with like a dorky fucking white kid?
Now that I don't know.
But you know people. Would you date him? Take a look at him. Or does he look like the kind of guy who like is a poser?
He looks like he is. I don't know. I don't think he's based off of looks. I don't think I would go see him. But I would probably just like look on YouTube or something and see how his shows turn out.
Okay.
Before I make that judgment.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help.
No problem. Is there anything else I can look up for you today?
Nope. I think I'm good. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. You take sheet. You have a great rest of your night.
Oh, you too.
How do I hang myself?
Just based on what he looks like, I wouldn't go see him. Just based on what he looks like.
I've also never seen somebody so open to those questions. Usually they'd be like, at work,
go.
Or like, you were like,
what? It's funnier when you do it with Joe Coy.
Goddamn. This podcast is sponsored by Google Gemini. College students, do you know you can turn the most complex topic into simplified ideas or hours of research into just minutes? How about turning class notes into practice quizzes that help you get the big idea? With Google, Gemini can do all of that and more, okay? You can even turn long reads and quick listens, because what's better than a podcast? Exactly, okay?
We always get scripts and big formats and documents. Like, sick of it. I don't want to read all this. Google Gemini helps just trim it down to just the beats you need to know.
Yes, it saves so much time. I can't even tell you how many times I use Google Gemini for emails. Like, dude, my agent will send me these long emails. I go, cool, don't want to read it. Literally copy, paste it, put it in Google Gemini. It will summarize exactly the main points that I need to respond. It is incredible, okay? So students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year. But hurry, this offer ends soon. Sign up by October 6th to get free access to Gemini 2.5 Pro Unlimited. Image uploads, deep research, notebooks, LM, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. Visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Goddamn.
My buddy used to work for Caroline's Comedy Club, and he said, he goes to us, he goes, you have no idea how much power we have on a day-to-day basis. Because when someone calls in, they go, I don't really know who I want to see. I want to go to see a comedy show in the next couple of weeks. Like, who should I see? And he would be like, oh, this person or this person. And they would recommend who they find funny and who they won't. And he's like, dude, you have no idea how much tickets we sell based on us just saying like, hey, man, it's going to be, this person's great.
That's crazy.
And she was lying. That was for a bit. She recommends you go there.
But that's indifference was like what our careers were like 15 years ago. It's like people would call the comedy club.
Yep.
Hey, I want to go to a show. Which show should I go to? And it was whoever the box office person liked.
Yeah, exactly.
And like smart people would go in and schmooze the box office
That's
people.
That's exactly
bring
what
them
he
cookies,
said.
Wow. Yep. Take care of them.
Yep.
And like most people, like Ian Bagg never did. He was like, yo, Ian Bagg's a little bit of a gangster in the way that he was like, I don't fuck the staff. I don't drink with them. Mm-hmm. I do my work and I go back to my room, and I'm not gonna get caught up in any drama. But adversely, I remember being in, this is a true story, everyone's got their own truths, but I remember being in Denver, and I was like, who do you guys got coming in? They're like, ugh, Ian Bagg. And I went, he's fucking hysterical. And they're like, yeah, but he doesn't like party with us. And I go, what do you mean? They're like, he doesn't even talk to us. Like, he kind of just does his work and goes home. I go, yeah, I'm not supposed to be doing what I'm doing with you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Ian's
yeah.
doing the right thing.
Get my dick out of your mouth. I got to go.
Tom called me up one time. Yeah. Tom used to get a bad rap at clubs because
really?
Tom would not, deservedly so at times, because Tom did not give a fuck about the hierarchy. There was a famous story that, I mean, he told on Rogan, was he went into a club. I'm going to try to paraphrase as best I can.
Yep.
He went into a club, and the person who was managing the club was dating a comic at the time, and Tom came in. They're like, hey, just give me a heads up. The feature bounced, so we're going to have the host do the host and the feature's time. Tom's like, well, hold on. That's 35 minutes. like, why don't we just, I'll see if I can get someone. They're like, it's too late. So Tom did it, and the guy crushed. He was, you know, he's an accomplished comic.
Right.
Tom went up, and he kind of struggled a little bit at first, won him over at the end, and, you know, it was like, reached out to someone who was real local. It was like, yo, I'm in .. I know you live in Cleveland. Can you come down and do the show? The guy's like, of course. So he gets to the club, and they're like, hey, we couldn't find a feature tonight, so we're going to do the same thing as last night. And Tom's like, "What? No. Hold on. I have this guy coming in."
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, he's not really past here. And he's like, no, he's performed here before. And they're like, yeah, but it's okay because we're just going to have him. It's easier to have him do the whole show. And Tom's like, hold on. And then was like, are you guys fucking? And the woman lost her mind. The club, she lost her mind. I'm almost certain she doesn't work there anymore. She lost her mind. And she was like, what are you saying? He was like, what's going on here? Am I getting used? Are you using my weekend to get him more? And it turned out they were. And Tom went on Rogan and burned it to the ground. And I was, and burned it to the ground. Burned it to the ground. I mean, just told the whole story with everyone's exact names. And I was in a car with Dave Stroop, who used to run the Columbus Phony Bone, and I think now he's just a part owner. But I was in the car with Dave Stroop, and I literally got picked up, and he was like, yo. It was like I want to say it was Monday morning, but it had to be Thursday, because I was coming in the club, and he goes like, yo, what's up with fucking Tom? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, dude, he just fucking blew up spot. He just said everyone's fucking names that they're having sex. I go, are they? He goes, yeah, they are. But like, you can't say that because like now the owners heard it. And I was like, yeah. So I called Tom. He's like, Tom's like, fuck him. Yeah. I'll never perform at that club again. And fuck her and fuck him and fuck everyone. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And Tom's like, fuck these clubs also. He's like, we're bigger than these clubs. We don't need these clubs. They need us. And I remember his wife calling and being like, yo, Bert. What do you think about what Tom says? We don't need these clubs. I go, Christina, do not listen to him. We need these clubs. They're our lifeline. Like, this is how we're going to build a fan base. Cut to like a year later, I'm getting fucked over by a club owner, and Tom goes, fuck them. You don't need them. Have you ever had it where, like, I've partied with chicks. I never hooked up with a chick, but I've partied with chicks.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten to a part where you're like, I think I'm getting drugged?
Well, you think that?
Oh, yeah.
If I don't eat before drinking, I have one drink. I've thought that before for sure. If on an empty stomach, like one drink, you're like, hold on. Why am I feeling this off one drink?
I went to a strip club with two girls in D.C. I was with Taylor Tomlinson. It's when she was young. I mean, she was
and a
young.
Stripper.
And two lesbians who we all met at the D.C. Improv. And they're like, hey, we're going to go out. And I was like, cool. I was like, Taylor, you in? She's like, yeah. And we start walking, and Taylor just bounces. And I was like, well, now this is a little suspect. I'm with two fucking chicks.
Yeah,
but my wife's cool. She understands. I know me. So I go to the strip club with them. And I sit down. And they give me a drink real quick. And I was like, oh, cool. And I go to drink it. And I was like, I came really fast. Uh-huh. And then I was like, you know what? I didn't order it. I was like, what did you get me? And they're like, it's a whiskey. And I was like, all right, cool, thanks. And then I was like, I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick. And they're like, okay. And I walked to the bathroom. I dumped it out.
Yep.
I walked up to the bartender. I was like, hey, man, I'm with two chicks. And can you make sure that all my drinks come straight from you? And he looked at me. He goes, leave. I said, what? And he goes, if you think you're going to get drugged, I'd leave.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, yeah, what am I doing?
You're 007 on this.
Yeah.
If I tap your shoulder twice, it means there's drugs in my drink.
He was just like a fucking 35-year-old Puerto Rican guy. He's like, leave, man. If you think you're getting drugged, leave. What are you here for?
Isn't it awesome how those random characters come into your life, but they're so important?
Oh,
like that moment right there saved you. Just a random guy.
I was on a plane with a guy one time. We were flying to Tampa out of New York. I was young, and I got cut off on the flight. 2.5-hour flight, I got cut off on the flight, right? And the guy next to me goes, just really casually goes, you're talking entirely too much. I said, what? He goes, stop talking. He goes, you sound drunk. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, when you order a drink on a plane, you tap to it, and you say, one more. And I went,
but you're hammered, so you're like, jeez.
I was like, hey, can I get, okay, what do you guys have? Like, I was just like that.
What a ball.
You guys have margaritas.
And like, he went like this. He goes like this. He goes, she walks by and goes like this. She sees him and he goes, and then taps to his drink. She nods and he goes, that's how it's done.
And she walks off and goes, I can't believe he's deaf in first class.
She comes over, passes a drink in front of him. He slides it over to me. He goes, you're welcome.
And that was drugged.
I'm 25 years old. I've been doing that for 27 years. I never talk. I go, yeah, yeah.
And you're blackout drunk?
Yeah, I've been so drunk. Don't
even really tapping your leg.
I was so drunk. I was so drunk on the last flight I just took that the guy, I usually get fried chicken at in Delta. If you lay in Delta, they have that fried chicken joint right across. Yeah. I always get fried chicken. They know me there. I always get a beer and fried chicken. And waited while I wait for the thing, I get two beers. And he came over and he very casually goes, are you sick today? And I went, huh? And he goes, are you not feeling well, Bert? And I went, yeah, I'm a little off. And he went, okay. And he goes, are you okay to get to the car? And I was like, oh, fuck, am I that bad? And he goes, oh, yeah. And it was because I just kept drinking on the plane. My friend's son died. And I was like, yeah. I got it right when I got on the plane. And I started bawling. And oh. I was like, it's even worse than that. It's such a big story. And I get it when I get on the plane. I have a little buzz on the plane. And I have my first drink. I'm listening to music. Have my second drink. And then we're about to land. And they're like, can I get you one more? And I was like, there's another double Jack on the rocks, lots of rocks. And that's six drinks in a fucking, I think it was like a 30-minute flight. Yeah, yeah. I was so wasted. I was like, oh. And then I got home and I was like, I was in my house and I was just crying.
How did I get here?
I was like, what the fuck?
Where's the flight
looking
attendant?
Looking at your wife. Be like,
But that's the, you know what? I always say the people that get in trouble drunk on a plane, I think they deserve the most forgiveness because they're usually the people that don't get drunk often.
Because they're not used to like
they're not used to altitude and the drinking and like it gets away from them. They're going on vacation and they don't drink all the time. And now they're here in an airport and they're celebrating. I'm going to Mexico and they're drinking beer, or I'm going to New Orleans and then they're drinking and they're drinking more. And then they're like all of a sudden they can't talk and they're like fucking hammered. And then they're on a plane and the altitude hits them. Yeah. So I always feel like those are the guys. They shouldn't get in trouble. It's guys like me. I handle it even when I'm blackout drunk.
Sober up.
I've been there enough where the guys are like, hey, you're not feeling good, Bert. And I'm like, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, did you get all your carry-on? I'm like, I did. Yeah. And they're like, okay.
Have you ever been kicked off a flight?
Never.
Okay. You ever seen it? That's always fun.
Dude, it's always fun. This girl got kicked off recently on my flight, or not recently, maybe 6 months ago. She was hammered, and she was escorted off. And I can remember it distinctly because she kept yelling, my dad invented the RAV4. Like that was gonna be the deciding factor.
If
like
you're
the people.
In Portland,
oh,
it would
oh,
be.
Okay. Shit. My fucking dad invented the RAV4. Fuck you.
You bitches want the RAV5?
After escorting her off, like that was a thing she thought was gonna be the magic word. So, I'm so sorry. Yes. Please sit back down.
We want Toyota Thon this year. We'll shut the fuck up.
RAV4.
My dad invented the RAV4. She said it like 74
That's
times.
Actually really funny.
I got a guy arrested one time.
Did you really?
Yeah. It was my fault. Hardcore.
What?
Edmonton, flying Edmonton to Phoenix, okay. Right?
And that's redneck to redneck action.
That's redneck to redneck. Hammered. Early morning flight out of Edmonton, get to the bar, crush. And then I'm like, all right, get on the plane. I have just bought a Rimowa steel carry-on, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, it's my first time using it.
Yep.
And I'm rolling on the plane. It rolls like butter. I'm a little buzzed. I'm sitting in first class.
You're rolling a little bit too.
Yeah. And I'm like, nice. I'm like, you know, spinning it and catching
it.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to do, dude. I fucking love that.
Like an X Games mode, man.
I got headsets in. I'm feeling good.
Dude, feel like you're in an NBA walkout.
Get on the plane, first row, favorite seat in the first class. First class, first row. I take my bag. I'm smiling. I'm looking at people. I throw my bag up top. And it's steel. I don't realize it's not going to catch, and it doesn't catch, and I drop it on a dude's face,
fuck.
Break his nose and his glasses, blood. I mean, it's bad. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Holy fuck!
I throw my bag up. Do you want to hear the machine?
And I'm like, I apologize. And he loses his shit. Rightfully so. He's got blood on his nose. His glasses are broken. There's a cut here. He's like, what the fuck? And I'm a little buzzed. And I'm like, sir, I apologize. Since it was my first time using the bag and I didn't expect it to slide. And I go, listen, what can I do to make this up to you? And he's like, you planned this. And I went, I didn't plan this. I said, this is an accident, sir. I'm sorry. And he goes, you and that fucking bitch planned this. And I was like, fucking bitch. And I look at the flight attendant. She's like this. And I go, no, sir, I fucked up. This is just me. I fucked up. How do I make this right? And he goes, you couldn't afford to make this right. And I said, try me. Please let me. And he goes, you couldn't afford my glasses. And his wife's cleaning his face up, and his face doesn't look as bad as it initially looked.
All right.
It doesn't look that bad, but his glasses are definitely broken. They're broke. I mean, I broke them on the
glasses,
brow.
$200?
Yeah. Well, he goes, my glasses are fucking $1,200. And I went, awesome. I go into my pocket. It's Canada. It's Edmonton. Old school t-shirt sales.
Yep.
Yeah, a bunch of loonies.
T-shirt sales.
I crack off $2,000. I give him $2,000. I go, sir, there's extra money for your glasses and your inconvenience. I apologize. And he looks at the money. He goes, how do you have this money? And I said, sir, I have more if you need more. I fucked your face up. I fucked up your glasses and I ruined your day. Please let me make this right. And his wife goes, no, that's actually fine. You've done more than you can imagine. So I sit down and the flight attendant comes up to me and goes, what can I get you to drink? And I was like, I'll take a double Jack on the rocks, lots of rocks. And she was like, awesome. She goes, thank you. And I went, huh? She was like, ugh, and walks away. And I was like, huh. And then she comes back and he goes, you planned this, bitch. I know you did.
Jesus.
And I was like, Christ. Oh my God. So what had happened is he had gotten a fight with a flight attendant before all of me showing up. So he thought
he didn't
that
know about
she
the...
said to me, can you break his nose with your blood? Break his glasses and I'll give you a cocktail. And so he went up in the middle of the flight and berated her and was like, fuck you. I know you planned this. And then he came back to me, apologized, gave me $1,200 back and said my glasses only cost $600.
Like, where'd you get the money? He's like, t-shirt sales.
He gave me my money back. And I was like, okay. So I get off the plane and a cop grabs me and he goes, sir, can I talk to you real quick? And I went, absolutely. And then he walks past me. The flight attendant's like, it's him. And I was like, huh? They grab him. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I was like, listen, I think it might have been my fault. I was like, I fucked up. Here's $800. Here's $1,200.
T-shirt money is feeding everybody.
Yeah, I start paying off cops. Yeah, I'm like, I'm so bad. I'm so bad. And then I ran into Felipe Esparza. I was just like, hey, bro, what a fool. And I was like, I just broke a dude's nose.
I just had a guy to prison off t-shirt sales, but everything else is going good.
Dude, they fucking pulled him over to the side. They arrested him for fucking yelling at the flight attendant.
Holy shit.
Wow. But yeah, man, I cracked that dude's face. Like, I fucking...
Those are heavy bags. That's what I was going to say. Those will fuck your face up. Those.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Those rollers.
That could be a terrorist attack is with one of those bags.
Goddamn.
Holy shit. God, you have such great stories.
Dude, I could sit here with you guys forever.
Okay, so this is a sock talk from Frankie. He wants to know if you still talk to your imaginary friend.
Which one?
He said the black one.
Oh. No, I don't. No, but I do have big brain, little brain that I talk to all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
And what does that look like?
Yeah, what is it?
Big brain is not a cool dude. Like, big brain right now, Alpha. Big brain will drive the ship a lot of times. And big brain right now is going, bro, let's rip the rest of that Red Bull, okay? We go over, we have one more podcast, we do spots, we get fucked up, we smoke weed, and we fucking sleep tomorrow. Yeah. We're just going to hang with Cedric the Entertainer. You know he's going to want to drink. Let's fucking go. And then little brain's like, buddy, we're doing really good, and your skin's looking better, and I think it's because we're drinking water, and hey, that Red Bull's going to give you heart palpitations.
Little brain sounds like a little bit of a bitch, too.
But little brain's the one I wake up with, and he's like, how are we doing today? And I'm like, yeah. And little brain's the sweetest guy in the world. Then big brain. And little brain would be like, hey, don't wake up big brain. I was like, what? And he's like, just let him sleep. Let's me and you just have coffee and talk about good thoughts. And then big brain wakes up. He's like, what the fuck? You guys are already awake? Yeah. God damn it. Have we not thought about cancer yet?
Zen,
we're all going to die. You know that, right? You fucking bitch.
How do you have so much energy? I look at guys like your caliber and I'm like, I'm tired doing what I do now. And I'm like,
I don't
like,
get
you
it.
Are managing so much more and doing so much more and flying so much more. I'm like, how do you have the energy?
I don't know. I sometimes say that about when I drink. When I stop drinking, I go, how did I do this? And I think it's a real willpower to like your thing is like, I feel like if I stop, will anyone notice or will they care?
Yeah.
And so you're like, I'm really doing this hoping. You always hope people like you, and then and then once you feel the pullback, you're like, you know, maybe I'll just disappear, and that's when that'll be the hard part is when you like, it's like we all know guys like that where and you just go, what could I be happy just acting? Or you know, I the beauty of a podcast is you're in charge of your own shit.
I know,
you know, so you're like, I can do what I do, and I'm just talking to a small group of people that they're on page with me, and I'll sell tickets to them. And but I think it's a real, I think it's like a FOMO. Like, I don't want to miss out.
Right.
Like, I didn't want to do a set at the Improv tonight. But then they're like, oh, Tim Dillon's coming by. And they named everyone. I was like, well, I want to say hi to everybody.
Right.
And so I should do that. And then I'll go over to the store. I'll see Tripoli and everyone. But then, Yeah, I don't know. I also think once you have money, it's a little easier to do stuff, everything. Mm. Like, it's hard to do it when you're broke. Well, yeah, you have a team of 15 that helps get shit done. So like all my scheduling's done for me. Like if I had press this morning over Rich Eisen, someone came to my house last night and picked out a shirt for me. Like little things like that. I had two people come over and set up all the podcast equipment in my house, in my gym. So all I got to do is get up at 6:30, get on the treadmill, do a little work. Like, I didn't do it, but I bailed on it. But like, and like, you know, and then you have an assistant. So the assistant comes to your house and turns on your coffee maker and makes you a coffee, and then you get out of bed. It's so funny. Today I was like, I kind of miss when I did it all myself, including book travel, book cars, did all the autonomy. Sometimes losing your autonomy, you lose your creativity. Like, sometimes the struggle is real. You need to be frustrated at the airport, just like everyone else, as opposed to taking the private entrance where, you know, you can leave an hour before your flight, and they just put you, they drive you right to your fucking airplane. But luxury allows you to do a lot of this stuff. I mean, look at Joe. Sit with Joe for a day and watch his day.
I can't fucking imagine.
I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, I did a Mr. Beast video. That's the craziest work ethic I've ever seen.
Really?
He's phone call. He takes phone calls from his car where it's air conditioning because they're always filming outside. Phone call. He hops out. Producer goes, say this line. He goes, and got it. Back to phone call, filming. And they just put him in places. Producer feeds him a line, puts him in the next place. And he's just constantly on. And then you talk to him and it's just normal. But you want to be like, hey, what was all that shit you were just doing?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's like, oh, yeah, that was Nike. You're like, oh.
That's crazy.
It's unreal. But yeah, again, he has people.
And then there's people like Tom. And I mean this, I hope this comes out respectfully. But Tom just stays in his lane. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I don't really care about all the other stuff. I'm doing a movie. That's what I'm doing. Two Bears is on hold. Your mom's house is on hold. I don't care about the money. I don't care about any of that. You know, because when we went into production, I went into production on my TV show. He went into production on his movie. Tom was like, yo, we're shutting down Two Bears. And I was like, what? He was like, we're shutting it down for 11 weeks. And I was like, hold on. We both know that to be the death kiss. Yeah, it's like, we can't just shut it down.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I can't do it. And then I think he came up with, what if we had Stavi and Chris do it? And then I was like, well, okay. But how do we stay attached to product? So we'd call in or we'd send voicemails, but it was probably the smartest thing we ever did because I think our fans missed us a little bit. I think we missed it a little bit.
Yeah.
We felt like the sting of how good they were doing. Mm-hmm. And we were like, well, fuck, we got to step up our game.
Yeah.
And so Tom's good. He goes, yo, I'm not doing a million different things. I'm doing the thing I'm doing, and then I'm gonna off to the next thing. And even when he does the thing he does, he's overwhelmed by that, so he's busy as fucking that. Mm. But like I just added an editing my TV show into my calendar of being on the road, doing three podcasts, trying to figure out a way to skinny up Something's Burning in Burtcast.
Yeah,
because it's just too much. It's like I'm doing 158 episodes a year of content, and at that you're like, I mean, I just think of it this way, like, and this was the way I thought of it. I was like, 158 episodes. Like, can you imagine if there was 158 episodes of Friends?
Yeah,
I think I'd get tired of them.
Yeah, I think
I'd be like, I don't need to see Friends ever again.
Well, we all started with one episode per week on podcasting. Nobody made that rule, but everybody just followed suit, and they're like,
ad sales people made that rule.
Yeah.
Ad sales people were like, yo, I want to cover my nut. So like, how many can you do? Can you do once a week? And we're like, yeah. I mean, Joe came up with his own rule of like, I'll do three a week, maybe five a week, maybe none for 2 weeks. Like, Joe just came up with his own rule. That's just Joe. But like, all of us were like, once a week, every week, same time. But that was the ad salespeople saying this to us.
All right, let's do a secret sock.
This is
an anonymous confession. They said, I used to eat ants up until college when someone caught me.
Cool.
Just want to get that off the chest.
I mean, nutritious maybe in some cultures.
Is it kind of like when you're getting like the seeds off a bagel? And you kind of, yeah.
I've eaten ants in New Orleans. But not like off the floor, but at a restaurant they serve chocolate covered ants.
At one point they were on the floor though.
They rinsed them off.
No, I ate them off the floor, I guess.
in some form or fashion, you ate them off the floor.
What did you eat? I ate a steak out of a field.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, like just, all, I mean, I guess we don't know, but like off the ground.
Yeah, I think he would like pick them up and eat them like that, just like that.
It's quite bizarre. We should
Keep him away from schools. Yeah,
we should check.
Maybe keep that one to yourself.
I think about how funny it was on Fear Factor back in the day. It would be like eating bull testicles, and the prize was $50,000, which in the grand scheme of things, you're like, you know, I feel like that's not the craziest amount of money for shows back then.
Yeah, I mean, if I had $0, I'm eating anything.
Correct,
you
but
want.
Like every reality show now is like $1 million. But you go back, not saying that's not a lot of money, but I'm saying like, that was the big, like, you eat this, you hang on this building, and you jerk off this goat, $50K.
Right, right.
I was the host of a game show one time. I won't say it. You can figure it out. And the prize money was $100,000. And I won't say names, but there was a rapper on that said game show. And everyone had audio speakers of what we were saying on our mics, went to speakers to the judges. And the guy was like, one of the guys was like, man. The prize is $100,000. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, can you imagine how that could change your life? And I heard the one rapper just laugh out loud. He was like, and I knew it. He was like, the guy didn't know he had mics.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, $100,000 would change your life. He was like, you think I get to keep $100,000? And the rapper just starts laughing harder. I go, I think you got to pay some taxes. He goes, You think I could invest that money before I pay the taxes? I was like, I don't think $100,000 is going to change anything in your life. I think you're about to blow through. I think you're about to go to jail.
Yeah.
But it was so funny to hear that rapper just go, and then he's like, "Man, what would you buy first? A house?"
Yeah,
this is so wild.
A water park, the CNN building.
Yeah, and I was like, I was still at the point in my career where I was like, $100,000 would be fucking sick,
insane. Yeah,
and you just watch this guy go.
Was it Busta Rhymes?
No,
it was Lil Wayne. It was definitely Lil Wayne.
Luckily, I've worked with a lot of rappers, so it's going to be hard to find.
I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bert Kreischer. God damn it. Thank you so much for coming on. We've been wanting to have you on for so long. Thank you for making the time in your schedule. You're about to be touring your fucking cock off. You're already the busiest man I know. So thank you for making the time.
Thank you,
anything
guys.
You want to plug? Anything we want to plug before you get out? That's it?
Permission to Party World Tour. That's it.
And our episode is on Something's Burning. And
it's
that
so good.
Is so
it's
funny.
So good. Funny, it's dude. So good.
Very funny. Had a great time.
It's the hardest I've laughed. You guys came in with thunder. And I like to say that, like, I'm so excited for y'all's success.
Thank you. And
to see all the big things happening in your careers, because, as you know, I've been a fan of yours for a while.
Thanks.
And I've brought you out and not just, you know, not just to the Super Bowl, but you're so talented. So I'm congrats.
Yeah, you've
helped
me a lot with everything.
I just
bring me out of the MGM show, introduce me to Tom, and then Tom let me open for him some arenas, and it's really opened a lot of doors. And
yeah, and you're so but you're fucking hysterical. You're absolutely hysterical.
Thanks for having us on that, and thanks for coming on this, man.
Yeah, let's do more shit together.
Let's do it.
Please.